White Rabbit Magic. I mentioned in a talk during session that I had taken up the practice of solitary retreats. I had been planning to do another the week before last, but the plans for me to mind someone's place in the country fell through due to their illness. So the last one I did was in late August near Jervis Bay. This was a sitting and walking retreat where I would sit during the early morning and then go for a long walk in the woodland adjoining the beach or in areas of national park during the day. Midweek in the winter months, there were few tourists. One day I went to the nearby Budaree National Park, encompassing the areas south, the southern headland of the area which was the southern headland of Jervis Bay. It is perched on high cliffs above the ocean. Parts are wooded, full of frogs, striped marsh frogs, which I recognised by their call, which, as I had read on the signboards there, sound just like two blocks of wood being struck together, like clappers in the dojo or Aboriginal clapsticks. But nearer the sea, it is low scrubland, which at that time of year was filled with spring flowers. I walked quite slowly, enjoying how much more I noticed when I was alone, not involved in conversation. There was an orangey-brown echidna making its way slowly across the wide pathway in front of me. I walked on and paused to look down on a cave in the cliffs nearby, where seals sometimes play and eagles soar. I didn't see either, but when I turned around, there was a large kangaroo on the path, watching me. He waggled his head in the manner used by Indian people to indicate what I discover is known as a harmony yes. It originated in dance, apparently, so that it could be clearly seen on stage by people at a distance. And I waggled mine back. He repeated the gesture, and so did I. We did that a couple of times, and then he loped off slowly along the path. I had to follow him to get back, so I went slowly and overtook him carefully, keeping my distance, and then he headed into the scrub. Then I remembered the actions of Poppy Harry Mundine Walker, who had taken me to the burial sites of his people. When we arrived there at the gate, a big kangaroo turned up and stood close to us, and Poppy Harry spoke to him in language, Bunjalung, and told him in that language why he had brought me there, to record him speaking their language. I bowed and thanked this kangaroo from Yuin country for allowing me on his country. It seemed like the right thing to do. Not long before, I had been rereading the book Fly Away Peter by Australian author David Malouf that Aitken Roshi had recommended to me soon after I arrived in Australia. At that time, I was very new to Zen, and so I was curious to know now what it was about the book that might have prompted him to recommend it to me. In the book, an elderly woman, a wildlife photographer, wonders what she is doing just after she hears of the death of a young man called Jim. A keen bird watcher she had befriended in Norfolk before he enlisted in the First World War. I am doing, she told herself firmly, what those gulls are doing, those oyster catchers, those terns. She pulled her hat down firmly on her curls. What had torn at her breast in the fact of Jim's death had been the waste of it. All those days that had been gathered towards nothing but his senseless and brutal extinction. She recalls seeing him look at the photograph she took of a sandpiper at the same time he had been looking at it. And the writing continues, bringing up the moment in her vision of him, his own being, that was just then so very like the birds, alert, unique, utterly present. That was what life meant, a unique presence, and it was essential in every creature. To set anything above it, birth, position, talent even, was to deny to all but a very few among the infinite millions what was common and real, and what also, in the end, was most moving. A life wasn't for anything. It simply was. The encounters I had with other lives that were not for anything, but just were, primed me to notice with renewed interest a koan in the Book of Equanimity, Uncle Mi's White Rabbit. Uncle Mi, Dongshan's uncle in the Dharma, went walking with Dongshan. A white rabbit dashed in front of them. Uncle said, "How quick!" Dongshan said, "How is that?" Uncle said, "Just as if a commoner were appointed premier." Dongshan said, "Though you are old and great, you are still speaking like that?" Uncle said, "What would you say?" Dongshan said, "The prince of successive generations descends in the social scale for a time." I was reminded of this case when I met the kangaroo and the echidna on my walk. The two monks were walking together when a rabbit dashed by, and they take the opportunity for a friendly mondo, which, as you probably know, is a testing and sometimes playful question and answer conversation between two Zen practitioners, often a teacher and student. In our culture, white rabbits are often associated with magic tricks, but here there is no trickery involved. Just everyday magic. This is the everyday magic we so often miss. So enchanted are we by the lure of screens and machines, or the having and getting of what we desire. The magic that is this living earth. This brings me to another koan I may have mentioned during the recent session. Case 94 of the Blue Cliff Record, No Seeing in the Surangama. The Surangama Sutra says, when we don't see, why can't we see the world of not seeing? If we think this is not seeing, that is, of course, not the world of not seeing. If we can't see the world of not seeing, or the appearance of not seeing, then that world is naturally not the world of things. Why isn't it yourself? The Surangama Sutra is quite philosophical. Indeed, much early Buddhist writing was. But reading or studying the sutras may not be the way to awaken to our true nature, as Daishan was to discover after his years of studying the Diamond Sutra. In Wu Men's comment on case 28 of the Wu Men Guan, we read, before Daishan crossed the barrier from his native province, his mind burned, and his mouth sputtered. Full of arrogance, he went south to exterminate the doctrine of a special transmission outside the sutras. When he reached the road to Lijiao, he sought to buy refreshments from an old woman. The old woman said, "Your Reverence, what sort of literature do you have there in your cart?" Deshan said, "Notes and comments on the Diamond Sutra." The old woman said, "I hear the Diamond Sutra says, past mind cannot be grasped, present mind cannot be grasped, future mind cannot be grasped. Which mind does your Reverence intend to refresh?" Deshan was dumbfounded and unable to answer. He did not expire completely under her words, however, but asked, "Is there a teacher of Zen Buddhism in this area?" Well, the old woman told him about the nearby teacher, Long Tan, and the rest, as they say, is history. The point is that despite all his studies of the Diamond Sutra, Long Tan was unable to respond to the old woman's testing. He needed to awaken to do that. For this reason, when we take up Zen practice, we are not initially encouraged to study the major sutras associated with Zen, including the Surangama Sutra, which, like the Lotus and Platform Sutras, was particularly popular in China. The Surangama Sutra is a philosophical text that explores the nature of our endless illusions. But I warn you, it may not help much if you are not already aware of their nature. That is something we must each of us discover for ourselves. The Surangama says, "When we don't see, why can't we see the world of not seeing? If we think this is not seeing, that is, of course, not the world of not seeing. If we can't see the world of not seeing or the appearance of not seeing, then that world is naturally not the world of things. Why isn't it yourself?" The sutra itself points to the fact that thinking is not the means by which we realize. So what is? I was starting to prepare this talk prior to the recent referendum. During that time, like many other Sangha members, I was involved in the Yes campaign. As most of you know, I had worked as a linguist specialising in Aboriginal languages for decades, since soon after I arrived in Australia. And knowing Aboriginal people, and I know Aboriginal people in communities around the country, I felt increasingly sad as it seemed that a loss was likely. But still I couldn't believe that most Australians would actually vote in a way that denied Indigenous people what they had asked for, and most of them voted for. I had not wanted to hear the result on the day, but I was at a family birthday party and someone told me the result. I didn't sleep well, and the next day I wrote to many of the people I had worked with on their languages, responding to their messages of pain. I also continued to read and to make notes on a book about the Surangama Sutra by Robert Rosenbaum. He had done his first session at the Berkeley Zen Center, expecting a pleasant and easy experience, having already attended many sessions previously at other places. But he really struggled with this one, physically and mentally. He wrote, "On the last day, we had closing Shosan ceremony. One by one, each of us was given the chance to stand up, go to the center of the meditation hall, face the teacher, Sojourn Mel Weitzman, and ask a question from the depth of our heart. Sojourn would make a terse reply aiming to direct us to the fundamental point of our personal practice at that moment. When my turn came, I told Sojourn how I'd come to Sesshin feeling wonderful, but had plunged immediately into misery. I described my pain, my sadness, and my frustration at having no idea what or why this was happening. Tearful and in anguish, I asked him, "What is this?" Sojourn paused, met my gaze, and answered me directly with one word: Nirvana. At that moment, something cracked open within me. I knew with complete certainty that Sojourn was right. I didn't understand, yet somehow I knew. Yes, this is Nirvana. We hear that Yunmen said every day is a good day, too. But when Hamas invades and murders hundreds of young Israelis at the Supernova Music Festival, it doesn't seem like a good day. When Israel prepares its invasion of Gaza, having already displaced thousands, telling civilians there who have no water and no fuel to leave, it doesn't seem like a good day. When our fellow citizens vote overwhelmingly not to recognise Australian Aboriginal people in the constitution of the land, which was unlawfully stolen from them after they had occupied it for at least 60,000 years, it doesn't seem like a good day. It doesn't feel like Nirvana. This teaching is hard to understand. Actually, it's impossible to understand. We are not being invited to understand. We are being reminded to respond appropriately, with compassion, with humility, with help and understanding. I know I've just said that we're not being invited to understand, but understanding I mean here in the sense of sympathetic awareness, not intellectual comprehension. Yeah. So, most of all, we are being reminded, and that means literally reminded, to let go of this one that is wanting to react to the pain and injustice with anger. Because this one is not the separate individual we imagine. This is the essence of the Mahayana path. But this is not just a nice idea. We are all interrelated, and so we must be kind to each other. It is also how all things is, from the cosmos to each particle of matter. Talking to Ross Bolitho about this, he quoted from Carlo Rovelli's book on the quantum realm, Helgoland, that he said expands on Nagarjuna's terse account of emptiness. And I quote, "The world fractures into a play of points of view that do not admit of a univocal global vision. It is a world of perspectives, of manifestations, not of entities with definite properties or unique facts. Properties do not reside in objects. They are bridges between objects. Objects are such only with respect to other objects. They are nodes where bridges meet. This world is a perspectival game, a play of mirrors, that exist only as reflections of and in each other. This is the quantum realm as the net of Indra. This talk has taken a philosophical turn here, meandered to quantum physics based on Nagarjuna, who famously articulated the concept of shunyata, emptiness in Buddhism. And it is this, although we don't talk about it in our everyday lives, that liberates us from suffering. Not because we respond to suffering by saying, not a problem, it's all empty. Though some people who get stuck in emptiness may take such an unfortunate position. But because of the live reality of our interbeing with all this, the white rabbit, the head-waggling kangaroo, the wild ocean cliffs, and also the bombing and the murder, the disappointment at the referendum result, and the tenderness of conversations with those who are hurting. And this, us here now, sitting together while scattered across this vast continent via the practical mystery of information technology. And finally, for a pared-back version of what I've been saying, put this poem in your pocket. It's called Economics. It's by Jared K. Anderson. We borrow our atoms. The universe owns them. The universe borrows our love and wonder. Those belong to us. Thank you for your attention.